go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Born in the Side Thursday on the Horn. That's our home, headonradionetwork.com. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 12th day of June, 2014. You can go to headonradionetwork.com, of course, to see a selection of news items for the day. I found them rather interesting as I was posting them earlier. You can also find your way into the chat room, folks wandering by even now, even as we speak. Good evening, Stockton Larry. Good evening, Sentient. Good evening, Jan, and, of course, the redoubtable, indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky. Good evening, one and all, and everybody else who wanders by eventually. Also at headonradionetwork.com, the pop-up player, pop-out player, easy, 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 if you're just sitting at a computer. If you're on a tablet or a mobile device of some sort, we recommend for at least the time being, we recommend the apps from TuneIn and or Stitcher. If you should happen to get advertisements on those, just remember, they were not placed there by the Horn. We have not sold out and started accepting advertising from Exxon or anything like that. Oh, no. No. So that pretty much covers it, doesn't it? Oh, yes. Yes, of course. The PayPal button is there. And I'm happy to announce that thanks to a combination of folks, thanks to Betsy and to Reinhard and Kelly and to Leo, guess what? The hole has been reduced to $70. $70 for us to be able to stand on level ground this evening, which is inspiring indeed. Which means that we'll get to the middle of June in pretty good shape for paying bills and some of that. Well, by the way, this is strictly technical stuff. Had a nice conversation with the manufacturers of the telephone processing unit today, and we're gonna get that process rolling, especially since the kindness of Jessica, who is helping out with some aging equipment and making at least some replacement possible, as well as, in this case, the repair bill. Don't know what the repair bill will be yet, but hopefully it won't be too brutal. But we'll be able to get that process started. Thank you very, very, very much. And so hopefully we'll be back to having our regular 6 lines of telephone service in fairly short order. Probably sometime next week. Cross thy fingers. Okay, so that's all the housekeeping pretty much out of the way. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, a day when we look at the things that simply make us shake our heads, drink raw rot gut tequila straight out of the cactus at this point. Or run screaming around the room and or the yard. I don't think you can get much more thorn in the side than to consider what's being considered in Washington, D.C. right now. To wit, on the part of some, how to get us back into that magnificent, magnificent wonderland of fun and adventure that we call Iraq. Yeah. because there's a great deal of Sturm und Drang over the fact that Iraq is presently being overrun by some sort of organization that's made up of some sort of religious fundamentalists, you know, fundamentalist gun-toting right. And the right wing are having a hissy. I think John Boehner called the president another name today. Oh, what did he say? He was taking a nap or something, or was that Senator McCranky from Arizona? Oh, you're not ready for this, but you know what? Screw it. Get the duct tape and the hockey pucks out. You thought I forgot about the hockey pucks. I didn't forget about the hockey pucks. Oh, no. This is Senator John McCain yelling at clouds, lamenting the fact that more mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, more husbands, more wives, more aunts and uncles, more cousins, more brothers and more sisters are not at this moment being fed into the patriotic meat grinder in Iraq. Now, when last we checked in with Senator McGrumpy, he was libeling and slandering Bo Bergdahl. See, if Bo Bergdahl would have just died, then McGrumpy could have been saying nice things about him. Here we go.
We cannot avoid the fact that Iraq's progress is now at greater risk than at any time since the dark days before the surge, and that it did not have to be this way. And finally, on December 14th, the day that the president in triumph visited Fort Bragg to mark the end, in his view, the end of the Iraq War, I said, over 4,000 brave young Americans gave their lives in this conflict. I pray that their sacrifice is not in vain. Unfortunately, it is clear that this decision of a complete pullout of United States troops from Iraq was dictated by politics and not our national security interests. I believe that history will judge this president's leadership with the scorn and disdain that it deserves. And
hey, McGrumpy, shut the F up. So we're not out there getting more American service personnel slaughtered with improvised explosive devices. They're not being picked off by snipers, blown apart hither and thither. And John McCain says that's that one's fault. Oh, F. History will judge him with scorn. Yeah, that was just one repig licking. Let's check in with. Let's check in with John Boehner. Oh, I'm sorry. That was. This is still about McCain, but there's a. It was a picture of John Boehner in the story. And, of course, if John McCain is in one place, Lindsey Graham, cracker, can't be far behind. Right? He said, I think American air power is the only hope to change the battlefield equation in Iraq. The Iraqi army is in a shambles, and without some kind of intervention, Baghdad is definitely in jeopardy. I have never been more worried about another 9/11 than I am right now. Head for the fainting couch, would you, Lindsay? We knew this was going to happen. We knew this was going to happen. Here's the fun part. The people who advised Dim Leader not to start his war against the people of Iraq in the first place knew this was going to happen. Yeah, meanwhile, Aunt Lindsey Graham continued. 10 or 15,000 strategically placed U.S. soldiers would have held this together. None of whom would be related to you, would they, Lindsay? None of whom you would even know. Just a bunch of nameless, faceless grunts that you would like to see sent out to dodge bullets so that you can feel more butch? I've never been more worried about another 9/11 than I am right now. Oh, my God, I think I'm going to have the fan tods. Somebody get the smelling salts and my rheumatiz medicine. Oh, yeah. And John Boner did chime in, too. He said, well, they've taken control of Mosul. They're 100 miles from Baghdad. And what's the president doing? He's taking a nap. Nap. Is there another bottle of Merlot over there? No? Is this the Pinot Noir? Have a nice oven, y'all. It'll be nice, I suppose. Anybody got a cigarette? Iraq is in the shambles. Of course, so too is the United States because of that war we raised in Iraq. But we're not going to talk about that. And hiccups. Somebody scare me real good. Make the hiccups go away.
Tea party.
Oh, no.
Here it comes. Here it comes. Strap in. These bastards are going to try to get us back into an... Get us back into... Because...
You know, if we had just done... If we just got not run away from Vietnam, we probably would still be there and it would be a free country. And maybe they could have some... Maybe they could have some factories where they would make tennis shoes. Wars. You mean they do? Let's see, it worked. Ay, ay, ay.
The administration, meanwhile, has said, you know what we could do? We could fly in some drones. Anybody want to do some drone attacks? Because now the thing has spread all the way to Baghdad. And here's one of the fun parts. Any guesses? Any guesses on how this group got armed? Any? Because I have a feeling when we left Iraq, we left a bunch of crap over there. Expensive crap. Deadly crap. Firearms crap. It really is chaos. But it's a chaos we bought and paid for. John McCain there in the clip that I play saying it was a terrible thing. It was a terrible thing to say that we were done. Well, what was Grumpy's plan? to stay there forever? Maybe it could be the 51st state, even before Puerto Rico gets a shot at it. That could be fun. That could bankrupt us. Oh, wait, already has. Yeah, except, I mean, we can't go bankrupt. I understand that. We print our own money. But when you take these Republicans howling for war, and you set them alongside, say, how about some kids in upstate New York who got their godforsaken personal touch lunches taken from them, taken off the table as they were trying to eat? Well, I realize the defense budget is different from the education budget. I got that. But there is still a connection. As you remember as well as I do how the right wing hollered, "Oh, but the deficit, sweet Jesus, the deficit, we're all going to be eaten by the deficit monster, and it's already living under our beds." And how seniors and poor people were just going to have to suck it up a little bit and get out of those hammocks because of the deficit, because the economy was in a shambles, because we were remember that one ran up a $1 trillion deficit. Oh, Jesus. And never a mention of the fact that that deficit was born in the flames of Nineveh, of Mosul. No. And suddenly forgotten is the famous Colin Powell reference to the, what was it, the pottery barn rule. You break it, you buy it. Well, we broke Iraq, and we have paid a hell of a lot for it, and for all I know, there are still some of those shrink-wrapped football bundles of $100 bills banging around Iraq somewhere. You remember the billion or so that just sort of got lost between the sofa cushions of the Coalition Provisional Authority? And we set up a government that had local petty dictators, tyrants, and crooks in it, and we expected it to function. How's that purple thumb working out? Not so good, huh? Oh, no. Note coming in from Shorty in L.A. under the subject line, "What the thorn in the side?" Website reporting, a security source revealed Wednesday, and I don't know how reputable this source is, but a security source revealed Wednesday the arrival of 4,000 U.S. troops to Baghdad International Airport for the award of the security forces in the fight against Daesh. This was reported yesterday. Really? I hope not. I hope that's just straight wrong. Sometimes, and I'm no isolationist, but sometimes we have to leave things alone. Sometimes we have to accept that we screwed things up, and you know, the best way to, if you don't want to screw things up anymore, the best way to not screw things up anymore is to stop screwing things up. Get out and stay out. But you know how it is with Republicans. If they can't steal it or F it, they want to bomb it. So I have a feeling we're going to be listening to a steady drumbeat of bomb, 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 Iraq. And at some point in time, maybe we'll start seeing those photographs again of men carrying their infant, the corpses of their infant daughters out of the rubble. Those photographs of the women working as fast as they can to cleanse and beshroud bodies so that they can be buried within the scope of Muslim tradition within 24 hours. Man, if you hated him the first time, you're going to hate it even more the second time around. No kidding. But that's not all by any stretch of the imagination. We have plenty of thorns for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Speaking of matters more domestic, I ran across this in Ceylon earlier today. A story by Katie McDonough. She writes, a Pennsylvania woman died in a jail cell over the weekend while serving a 48-hour sentence for her children's unpaid school fines. Eileen DeNino was found dead on Saturday in a Berks County jail cell where she was midway through the sentence that would have eliminated around $2,000 in fines and related court fees related to her children's attendance at school. Police have said her death is not considered suspicious, but the cause has yet to be determined. She was 55 years old and a mother to 7 children. District Judge Dean Patton remarked, this lady didn't need to be there. We don't do debtor's prisons anymore. That went out 100 years ago. But it didn't. It may have gone out 100 years ago, but it has come back in this increasingly brutal, 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 broken country. Judge Patton does say, according to the Associated Press, he does say that he's lost sleep over Ms. DeNino's death. Well, how conscience-y of you. On the other hand, he did go to pains to point out that sometimes a little jail stint can break the habit of parents who'd rather party into the night than take their children to school the next day. According to Judge Patton, Ms. DeNino did not work or appear to have much in the way of help with 4 children who were still at home. She frequently, according to the AP report, skipped hearings or arrived without requested documents. Judge Patton said she cared about her kids, but her kids ruled the roost. She was just accepting what was coming and would let the cards fall where they may. Although she was often unkempt, she came to court clean and neat to surrender on Friday. According to Judge Patton, she had on clean sweatpants, had combed her hair, and had tape, holding her glasses together. She was a different person. She was cleaned up, smiling. I think she realized when this is done, the weight was off her shoulders. Well, it's all off of her shoulders now, Judge Patton. You brute. She ain't got no problems no more. But 7 children do. And how is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania going to deal with having 7 or at least 4 charges upon it now? Well, they can go F themselves. They can learn, as Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, once suggested, they can learn to dumpster dive. This case is one of many, and it shows the increasing viciousness that inhabits the spirit of this country. According to National Public Radio, a homeless man was sentenced to a year in jail because he couldn't pay the $2,600 penalty he incurred after shoplifting a $2 can of beer. Then there's a teenager who got put into jail for 3 days because he couldn't pay the fine that came with catching a fish out of season. Jesus, I thought we got past remember when the king's man, the Shire Reeve, had the power to have a person executed who was caught hunting the royal game in the royal preserve of the royal forest of the royal grounds of the royal majestic noble graciousness? That's okay. Somebody still loves Judge Patton, and he can sit there and say, well, I had second thoughts about sending her to jail, but, well, I just kind of had to because I had to break her habit. Man. And 4 children still at home who don't have their mama. Yeah. Lord God. Like I said, it's a thorny thorn in the side. Anybody going to watch the World Cup? I had a great note from our buddy Scott in Sweden. You may recall that way back in what was still the grips of winter, he politely asked me to not talk about the NCAA basketball tournament. So lo and behold, I was checking my messages over on Skype earlier today, and there was a note from Scott. Just a quick thanks about not spoiling the NCAAs. I finally finished it last night. Connecticut? I'd have never guessed, but they played a great tourney. When did the national anthem turn into marching honor guards? The NCAA used to be less slick and therefore enjoyable. Now it's so corporate, it's almost time to give up on it. Oh, well, at least there's the even worse FIFA, and that one I'm going to skip for the first time. What they've done to Brazil and South Africa is inexcusable. Yeah, I agree, Scott. And that was kind of surprising, Connecticut, wasn't it? Dateline Sao Paulo. Where masked anti-World Cup protesters clashed today. Just hours before the tournament's opening match, they clashed with military police in Sao Paulo. Black bloc protesters, about 100 of them, tore down street signs and traffic lights. They set fire to them. They blocked a central street. The police responded with rubber bullets and stun grenades. They were trying to march toward the arena where the whole thing is getting started, the black bloc was. The opening match, of course, between Brazil and Croatia this afternoon. No idea. Did anybody watch? Police have been using the whole tear gas and rubber bullets approach with lots of other smaller protests. The smaller protest group earlier simply carried a banner that said, "If we have no rights, there won't be a cup." It has been ugly, 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 the run-up to this World Cup. because of the amount of money that has been thrown into it that is desperately needed for things like infrastructure and the general well-being of the vast, vast poverty segment of the Brazilian population. Note coming in from Asa in Vancouver. I think our buddy Scott in Sweden meant to say the NAACP tournament, didn't he? Oh, I'd almost forgotten that. Thanks for reminding me. Well, that's what it is over on Fox News Radio Rwanda, that's for sure. Marty letting me know, he said, I didn't watch the game, but I did get a notification that Brazil won. Yeah, Marty knows Les Miserables for the 21st century. The demonstrators have chanted, there won't be a cup. $11 billion was laid out by the Brazilian government for this massive display of bread and circuses. Mostly circus, not so much bread. People opposing the cup have said that $11 billion would have been far better spent on education, health, housing, and transport. In covering the rioting, in covering the protests and the rioting by police, you know, the guns and the gas, a CNN journalist and her producer received injuries. They got hit with a tear gas canister. Three other journalists were injured as well, one from the Associated Press, one from a French TV team, and a Brazilian from broadcaster SBT. According to 27-year-old Gregory Liao, the objective is to put an end to the World Cup. We realize we're not going to achieve it, but we believe Brazilians should rise up. Brazilians love football, but they don't need this right now. Yeah. Airport workers have gone on strike in Brazil. The subway transportation workers have threatened a strike. There have been massive traffic jams. There were about 500 protesters gathered in downtown Rio de Janeiro. Those 500 in Rio were shouting, FIFA, go home. What are you, are you following this? Are you going to? I admit the last one, the South African one, I watched a number of matches and it was quite enjoyable, but I also recognize that any of these massive sporting events they only happen by raiding the coffers of the commons of whatever country is hosting it. We raid the commons for the Super Bowl. Brazil is raiding the commons for the World Cup. South Africa raided the commons for its World Cup. God knows, Russian citizens got their commons just raided the hell out of for the dumbass Olympics in Sochi. And to what end? Well, obviously, because money, right? Sure. There's no other answer. So, if you were in Brazil, where would you be? In the stadium or in the streets? I don't see it as being. I mean, Brazil loves its sport just as most other countries do. But do the people have to pay with their daily bread? These teams are often owned by billionaires. God knows FIFA may actually be more corrupt than the International Olympic Committee, which is saying something. And where does the money come from? It comes from the commons, and it comes out of the pockets of the poor. Ugly. Just ugly. And does the United... This is just... Marty says, if I could watch merely for the sport, I'd follow it rather closely. However... Yeah. It's almost impossible to separate the sport from the economic brutality that underpins it. Like I said, lots of thorns. This is a rose with a lot of thorns. Here's something interesting. This is more in the way of what seems like good news. We all know that I have a profound regard for Tesla Motors. Let's put it bluntly. I want a Tesla. Ain't going to get a Tesla, but I'd like to have one. Well, guess what Tesla did today? Tesla gave up all of its patents. And one presumes there's a bunch of them. They announced today, Tesla did, that they're giving up all of their patents to the open source movement. In order to foster an increase in electric vehicle technology. In a blog post, Elon Musk, who is the CEO of Tesla, said, "All our patents belong to you." You meaning the world. Yesterday, there was a wall of Tesla patents in the lobby of our Palo Alto headquarters. That is no longer the case. They have been removed in the spirit of the open source movement for the advancement of electric vehicle technology. We believe that Tesla, other companies making electric cars, and the world would all benefit from a common, rapidly evolving technology platform. He went on to explain that when Tesla was first created, we felt compelled to create patents out of concern that the big car companies would copy our technology and then use their massive manufacturing, sales, and marketing power to overwhelm Tesla. Elon Musk then said, "We couldn't have been more wrong. The unfortunate reality is the opposite. Electric car programs, or programs for any vehicle that doesn't burn hydrocarbons, at the major manufacturers are small to non-existent, constituting an average of far less than 1% of their total vehicle sales." The Tesla Motor Car Company is fascinating to me within the well-defined confines and strictures of capitalism. It's fascinating to me. I was thinking about it the other day. I'd love to work out some. It's one of the few places, and yes, in a minute I'll get the email. But Elon Musk is a libertarian. Okay. he also seems to be quite concerned about not burning a bunch of fossil fuels and heating the damn planet up to the point that humans can't live on it anymore. Anyway, I'd love to figure out a way to work out some sort of a sponsorship deal. No, no, I don't want your money. Just, you know, Tesla, car. I talk about car, and, you know, that's the deal. Because if they did that and sold one Tesla on account of the things that we talk about here, their deal would be paid for. One car. Anyway, I did get to thinking about it the other day and what they need. You know, the Tesla S is out there. The Tesla X, I think, is coming. That's the all-wheel drive sport utility vehicle or crossover vehicle with step-in second and third row rear seating, which is really cool. They have falcon wing doors. Who? Yeah. But I got to thinking, those are great. But we will know that they're really going to cross over and start threatening the hydrocarbon burners when they figure out a way to make a pickup truck. When Bubba is plugging up his pickup truck and running around in it. I get to thinking about it, and I'm no engineer and certainly no scientist, but doesn't it make sense when you consider how much torque is available in an electric motor? I mean, it's all right there instantaneously. There's no wind-up. There's no spin-up. There's no rev. It's just boom. It's there. Wouldn't it make sense to make an electric all-wheel drive pickup truck that Bubba can get in and drive around in and go out a mudding in? Doesn't that just make sense? Go four-wheeling in. Hell yes. Maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I would have done something like, right, you know, dear Tesla, how about a pickup truck? Not anymore. Nah. But this is interesting that they've turned over their patents and made them open source. You got to think that's going to wind up with some, or you hope it's going to wind up with some positive outcomes. It's about 17 minutes before the hour, and that wasn't really a thorn. I just wanted to get that story out there because it's nice to get some good news into the mix every now and then. The idea that by the end of 2015 there will be solar, and I don't know if he's listening tonight or not. Oh, brother Albert, the idea that there will be solar-powered charging stations located in such a way all over the country by like the end of 2015 so that you can get in your Tesla fully charged, drive 260 miles, stop, pull over, spend 30 minutes eating lunch, put another full supercharge on the Tesla and move on to the next. And it all comes with the price of the car. Absolute and utter freedom from the hydrocarbon industry. Damn, that's beautiful. It's also the future. What would happen to the carbon footprint of the United States? And I realize this is just pure speculation. What would happen if all of our hydrocarbon-burning passenger vehicles were replaced with electric vehicles? What would happen to the United States carbon footprint? I mean, we know what would happen to, let's say, the CEO of ExxonMobil. He'd probably get all Second Amendment-y and take to the streets. Bean and Horzak and John and Kathy have entered the chat room. Good evening, y'all. Yeah, Kathy in the chat room says, I actually like looking at wind farms. They're mesmerizing. I love them. That time a few years ago when we drove to Minneapolis 1,000 miles and just went, there were wind farms everywhere out in the middle of the Midwest. And none of them's actually making any electricity because the coal industry done told me that's the fuel of the future, right? Going back to the discussion of the World Cup, Ron in Raleigh with a note. Hey, Bob, I've just about given up on pro sports. I've come to the realization that pro sports are a parasitic drag on cities. Dave Zirin, I believe, wrote an article about the Major League Baseball strike, stating that cities fared better financially when the teams weren't playing. Pro-team owners blackmail cities to build their stadiums and arenas while they steal land through eminent domain. George Bush, anyone? Let these clowns sink or swim on their own dime, but politicians are in the thrall of pro sports owners and can't see the truth about this abusive relationship, and that is absolutely factual. It's been documented now that every time one of these massive sports hoop-de-doos comes to town, the town takes it on the chin. I ran across an article a few weeks ago just... It was largely a photo essay, and they were photographs of Olympic facilities from 1936 forward, and I'm not going to say his name, but all the way up to the Greek Olympiad of the beginning of this century. And there are already weeds poking through the concrete, through the pavement. All of these exquisite venues that were so magnificently displayed in on television broadcasts around the world are ruins. Absolutely ruins. There were some particularly poignant photographs of, I think, the luge run in Sarajevo, which at one point in time was used during the Civil War there as some sort of redoubt. Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Ron. Whether it's pro sports franchises, and the sad thing is these things do speak to our urge for a group dynamic, something that we can all root for in common. Like L.A. not having a professional football team. It's silly. Nice note coming from Jessica. She says, wait until the Olympics come to Fukushima. Radiation versus reality? Oh, yeah. That's going to be a blast. Probably the wrong term. Marty noting, if I were in Brazil right now, I'd be anywhere near the border of Argentina. It could get ugly in Brazil. And see, Brazil was supposed to know better because they had that sort of socialist president and then his protege, and now they've been entirely, what, corrupted, seduced by economic expansion and trade with China and all of that. Yeah, like I said, it's an interesting thorn in the side Thursday. Bouncing all over the place. But that's how it is with thorns. Ow, 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 ouch, hey, ow. And you just try to reach for somewhere that doesn't jab you. Let's check in with Derek Isaacs. Derek Isaacs hosts something on the interweb tubes, and it looks like it's had a lot of money put into it, called Creation Today. You know this is going to be a real Lulu. We've talked about Derek, D-A-R-E-K, Darek. God, he sounds like a Vulcan. Isaac's in the past. This is the guy who wrote a book called Dragons or Dinosaurs? He posits the notion that our ancient mythologies about dragons are based on human interactions. Yeah, with dinosaurs. And every time I see this, well, I have to think of this.
Fundamentalist Christianity, fascinating. These people actually believe the world is 12,000 years old.
No, Bill, 6.
Swear to God. Based on what? I asked them. Well, we looked at all the people in the Bible and we added them up all the way back to Adam and Eve. Their ages, 12,000 years. Well, how fucking scientific. Okay. I didn't know that you'd gone to so much trouble there. That's good. You believe the world's 12,000 years old.
That's right.
Okay, I got one word to ask you. One word question. Ready?
Uh-huh.
Dinosaur. You know, the world's 12,000 years old and dinosaurs existed, and they existed in that time. You think it would have been mentioned in the fucking Bible at some point. And oh, Jesus and the disciples walked to Nazareth, but the trail was blocked by a giant brontosaurus with a splinter in his paw. And oh, the disciples did run a-shrieking, "What a big fucking wizard, Lord!" But Jesus was unafraid, and he took the splinter from the brontosaurus' paw, and the big lizard became his friend. And Jesus sent him to Scotland, where he lived in a lock for oh so many years, inviting thousands of American tourists to bring their fat fucking families and their fat dollar bills. And oh, Scotland did praise the Lord. Thank you, Lord.
You know, I think my favorite part of that is where the disciples run a shrieking. But I think of that every time I hear about one of these the damn dinosaur stories. But it gets worse. No, not worse, worst. It gets worse. So this guy's on this evangelical fundamentalist program. And they get around to, oh, God, I hope you're not listening, Dr. John. Hockey puck. Duct tape, Dr. John, if you are. Try to keep the hooting to a minimum. It's always fun when the fundamentalists, they do, they put the fun in fundamentalists. It's always fun when the fundamentalists get around to talking about evolution, because evolution is just, it's not biology. It's not the most elegant statement of how life came into being on Earth. No. It's just deviltry. Plain old-fashioned evil. Right? Sure. Creation Today.
The reason I wrote that book is there's one thing, one thought I could not get out of my head, and that was, if evolution were true, then how now shall we live? Meaning, if we were a product of evolution, a product of survival of the fittest, if there is no God, and we're just here by random chaotic force, and we're just molecules in motion, if you will, how would that impact our life? And I found out that once I studied it, and I studied Darwin, I studied Dawkins, Hitchens, E.O. Wilson, some of the...
Wait, Dawkins and Hitchens are public, or were, in one case, public intellectuals. to say that you've studied them is not to say that you have studied evolution. Would you trust this guy with one of those little throwaway scalpels to go into a biology class and dissect a frog or even one of those really long, scary earthworms like we had in 10th grade? Me either. You know, we had to dissect one of those giant grasshoppers, too, and it put me off Reese's Cups for years. Inside of that grasshopper looked just like a Reese's Cup. Anyways, back to Darek.
Layers of evolutionary thought, and they led me to a very, very dark place, because you have to start asking questions. Well, if evolution is true and it's just all about the male propagating their DNA, well, what in the world is... We had to ask hard questions like, well, is rape wrong?
Oh, my.
You know?
Oh, my. Leave it to a follower of the Prince of Peace to ask, is rape wrong? Because, see, that's how it is. That's how it is with evolution. If you understand evolution and you try to participate in a culture that's based on science, you know what else you are? A rapist. You know who else was a rapist? Hitler. Oh. We have to ask the hard questions. Is rape wrong? Because, see, you can't possibly think rape is wrong unless you've got some sort of idiotic Bronze Age monotheistic religion to tell you it is. Because no other culture on the planet ever came up with the idea that rape is wrong. And the problem, the most inherent problem with that, is that there are lots of places you can look in that Bronze Age book and find excuses for rape. Not patent prohibitions on rape, but excuses for them. And therefore, if thy daughter be raped, then the rapist shall bring to the father of the raped daughter 12 goats, 3 chickens, and a pair of llamas. No, there were no llamas. Camels. The stupid. It burns us. But again, it's never so much about the guy saying the stupid thing as it is about the people that you can imagine sitting at home looking at one another and, I did not know that Charles Darwin was a rapist, but I can certainly believe it now that I understand that evolution means rape. God, this stupidity! Because why wouldn't an evolving species just engage in rape? Human beings evolving. Why not? Well, perhaps because in order for the group to, or the tribe or the troop or whatever to be successful, rape doesn't fit because you need everybody contributing to the well-being of the group. That's why the idea of the nuclear family is such a ridiculous fraud. The jackasses ye have always with ye. Well, here, look at that. 7 p.m. Here we are at the end of our first hour. And so we will go take a little break. The Green News Report, this being Thursday, the Green News Report is on its way. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always enjoy it. Of course, your calls are welcome. Your thorns. Bring your thorns to the table. Until such time as we do have the telephone processor fixed, the phone number is 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And you can jump right in. Remember, just another reminder, if somebody's on the phone, you can't be put on hold. You just got to wait till somebody's off, and then it's your turn. So jump in there, 304-574-8178. Wander over to the chat room. We've been having some great, enjoyable evenings in the chat room lately, and I'm sure the folks there would welcome you. I know they would. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Fun tickets in my pocket, visions in my brain. Grandfather always told me if I went down, I might never come back again. I studied the language tapes and I read all the books. Still nothing prepared me for my very first look. It was my first look. Baby, that's all it took was my first look around. I think I want to go fly, but I don't want to leave the ground. I'll just cruise on my landing gear and taxi around the old town. Up to the mountain, down to the sea. Take me to Leblon where the Samba Queen awaits for me. It was my first look. That's when I swallowed the hook on my first look. Amor a primeira vista, você não quer que eu insista. Amor a primeira vista, reação química, química, química. Amor a primeira vista, você não quer que eu insista. Amor a primeira vista, reação química, química, química. Days later, I was feeling like a missing link. When my friends told me, hey Jimmy, it must have been the hoodlum drink. Now it's time for siesta and the belly full of rice and beans. And figure if I'm brave enough to repeat the whole crazy scene. Oh my first look. That's when I swallowed the hook on my first look around. Amor a primeira vista, você não quer que eu insista. Amor a primeira vista, reação química, química, química. Amor a primeira vista, você não quer.
It's Thursday, June 12, 2014.
Obviously, we came up short.
GOP leader Eric Cantor defeated by climate denier, who doesn't want you to know he's a climate denier, and for good reason.
The argument is not about climate change. The argument is about the best means to respond to climate change.
Australia broils in its hottest 2 years on record, but their prime minister is a global warming skeptic. Historic heat brings riots to India, plus Tesla is giving away its secrets for free.
All of those secrets and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We cannot lose the coal industry, folks. What will we give to naughty kids on Christmas?
This is your Green News Report.
A stocking full of wind? Come on.
Okay, Desi Doyen, as we go to air today, big news from Tesla, who says they're giving away their technology to the world for free. The electric car company who makes these fantastic cars? Really?
Yes, they're going open source. Tesla CEO Elon Musk has announced that his company will, quote, not initiate patent lawsuits against anyone who in good faith wants to use our technology. That means that if other car companies want to produce electric cars, they can use Tesla's technology to do it and advance Musk's dream of electric vehicles everywhere.
That's amazing, actually. I hope others take him up on it. And I hope he can be trusted that he won't sue them when they do.
Yeah.
What else you got for us today?
Well, first, an historic record heat wave in India is bringing the nation to the breaking point, causing rioting over widespread blackouts and hundreds of deaths. Temperatures have held at more than 110 degrees for nearly 3 weeks now.
Wow.
In northern India, with some areas hitting 120 degrees. Overnight temperatures in Mumbai this week did not drop below 110 degrees. At midnight.
Wow. And the rioting that comes with it is, again, exactly what not only scientists but defense experts here in the U.S. have been warning us about for so long.
Yeah, that it will lead to unrest. Now, climate scientists say that this heat wave already bears the fingerprint of human-caused global warming. They predict that these extreme temperatures could become the new normal in coming decades. Down under in Australia, they're in the midst of one of their hottest autumns on record in the southern hemisphere, and they just announced that the last 2 years in Australia were Australia's hottest 2 years on record, and that trend is also projected to get worse with global warming. But sorry, Australia, your Conservative Prime Minister Tony Abbott is a climate change skeptic who repealed Australia's landmark carbon tax.
I believe that carbon taxes and emissions trading schemes are the wrong way to go. The right way to go is to take sensible steps to improve energy efficiency, to cultivate better soils, to plant more trees, to take the kind of direct action measures which we certainly intend to take in Australia.
Abbott is traveling in the U.S. on his first official visit this week. He says he and Canadian Prime Minister David Cameron are committed to increasing their country's fossil fuel exports, and therefore they oppose any strong international agreement to reduce the carbon emissions that cause global warming.
Yes, anything but charging more money to industry. Nonetheless, in that debate, I think it's a legitimate one. At least he's not out there saying, no, global warming doesn't exist, there's nothing we need to do about it. At least he's recognizing that there's a problem. Now the debate is about what to do about it, which frankly is where the debate ought to be.
Yes, but he does favor only voluntary controls for polluting industries, which his own scientists say will do absolutely nothing.
Oh, well, he has the right to be wrong, but, you know, at least he's not crazy.
Meanwhile, here in the U.S., in the shocking reported primary election loss of Republican House Majority Leader Eric Cantor this week, it's no surprise that his Tea Party-backed challenger, David Brat, is a climate change denier who spouts myths like scientists predicted an ice age in the 1970s, which, of course, isn't true. Scientists didn't say that.
But Time magazine said so on the cover, so I guess that counts.
But it was never a scientific consensus.
In fact, at the same time, way more scientists had warned about warming rather than cooling back then. But press on.
We'd play you the audio of Brat denying global warming, but once Mother Jones reported on his science denial, all of his YouTube videos were suddenly pulled and set to private. Somebody doesn't want you to know he's a climate science denier.
And why would that be?
Because new public policy polling shows American voters have very little tolerance for denier politicians. A new PPP poll finds not only are President Obama's new carbon emission standards for power plants very popular with the vast majority of Americans, but also the same poll finds more Americans than ever say they won't vote for any presidential candidate in 2016 who doesn't believe that climate change is caused by human activity.
That's a whole lot of people who won't be voting for whoever wins the Republican primary for president in 2016. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we could not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download us anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes, where we hope you'll give us a good review to help other people find us as well. Plus, follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You know what? That is as good a piece of episodic reporting as you're likely to find. Bar none. Bar none. Thanks very much for joining in for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's go to the phones, 304-574-8178, and find out if anybody's got any other thorns. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, what's happening, Jim?
I don't know. Just do a little word association. Let's see. Pro sports streamers, welfare for the general populace, Social Security, corporate welfare. What do you think of the right things as far as the 1% are concerned?
That's a rhetorical question if I ever heard one.
It just blows my mind, man. In fact, I was talking with my sister-in-law. Very attractive young lady. And we were talking, and then she was, I don't know. You know, when you're talking to somebody, you can tell where they're coming from, usually, politically. And she seems to think, everybody can just always pull themselves up by their own bootstraps.
Yeah, what do you do when you ain't got no boots?
In her case, she's very attractive, which is, for a woman in this society, can be a burden, but can also help you a lot. You know? It can get you killed or raped, you know? But it can also open a lot of doors. Even benevolent me, enlightened me, notice I tend to be nicer to more attractive women than less attractive women, to some extent. I try to, watch for that, but it's just kind of DNA.
Welcome to biology?
Yeah. Or whatever I consider attractive.
But it's also welcome to culture.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, if I grew up in parts of, Africa, where they had, where they do the things with the plates in their mouths, so they elongate their mouths or stuff like that, that might be a real turn on to me.
Well, look, the entire Victorian era was spent with uptight, repressed, sexually repressed Europeans, absolutely thrilling to the sight of an ankle.
Yeah, well, it's just like in the Middle East, in the Islamic world, look at her, she showed her ankle, she's asking for it, Then the father and the sons rape her and kill her.
Jesus. Yeah, and which takes us right back to Boogerhead Derek Isaacs, Darek, I don't know. Is there anything wrong with rape? I mean, if evolution, rape okay. Back to the cave, Derek.
Yeah, I'm still amazed that they get anybody vote. You know, I can understand a certain segment, but how they get over 30% even voting for him is beyond me to figure out. I mean,
well, but did you? But Jim, did you hear that? Well, I don't know if you did or not because you were. But you know what? 40-some percent of potential 2016 presidential voters say they will not vote for a candidate who denies global warming.
Well, about the same percentage said they would not vote for an atheist. No, actually, it was more. It's like 53%, 47%. It wasn't. I saw that on the internet or something, or I heard it on your show or something. Everything's. I know I heard it somewhere or saw or read it somewhere. So, it sounds like a true fact to me. I mean, I know, dude. I live in Louisiana, Stan.
You should.
Thank goodness,
right.
Thank goodness I don't live much further north, because then you start really getting into the heavy, thick Bible Belt.
You mean you live in the less weird part?
Slightly less. Yeah. It's
sliding. Sliding scale.
Yeah. In fact, the other day I was out having a beer and I don't know, a man of the cloth, a priest, walked in and I don't know.
It sounds like the setup to a joke, Jim.
No.
Two priests walk into a bar.
A priest walks into a bar.
He says, and, "Ow!" Sorry, no, couldn't resist.
I don't know. I kind of semi-expressed my disdain for organized religion and whatnot, and yeah. Then I understand the bartender taking up for him in a way, because that's a customer. You know, I think it was Episcopal of some sort. Oh, so you're from that sect. Which kind of freaks people out, because what they don't realize about religion is when you really get into sex, if you're not in the right sect, you're going to hell. In fact, you're going to hell faster, because you just happen to pick the wrong sect, you know?
Exactly, because, yeah, that clip that I played last night of Louis Gohmert, who was apparently all fraught up in his asparagus, asking Reverend Barry Lynn whether or not Jesus was the way, the truth, and the life. Hey, does it never occur to Louis? I mean, well, it does. And what goes unsaid in a statement like that is that everybody's going to hell but Louis and his pals. Heaven's going to be a big, echoey place, because it's just going to be Louis and his buddies.
Yeah, exactly.
If you get them liquored up enough or put a little sodium pentothal dart in their neck, pretty soon they'll start telling you that the Catholics are going to hell, the Greek Orthodox are going to hell, the Episcopalians, the Lutherans, the Presbyterians, everybody but them. It's barbecue time.
Exactly. And now it's gone to me a while back, but what's the number one determining factor of your religion, or lack thereof?
Where you're born.
Exactly. Well, three things. Location, location, location.
There you go.
Where you're born, when you're born. I mean, if you're born in ancient Greece, you know, Jesus isn't around yet, and so all those people just
sure. I was talking with one of my Facebook friends the other day, a guy who goes by the name of Nexus, and he was asking, you know, are you proud to be an American? And I said, being proud to be an American is like being proud of being right-handed. If you're going to be proud of something like that, then you must be pretty hard up for things to be proud of. And then he says, well, are you ashamed to be an American? And I said, no, I'm ashamed of what a lot of Americans do, but being ashamed to be an American, I'm ashamed of the accident of my birth? Isn't shame something that we reserve for things that we do intentionally that we then later wish we hadn't?
Yeah, but then getting off on the religious tangent, which, you know, I have to go to my Calvinism rant. And, I mean, that's basic. That kind of blows my mind, you know, but that's just a justification for people being rich and doing what they want. You know, just like that 14, 15-year-old killed with four or five people. Oh, well. You're too rich to go to jail. It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, well, there is such a thing as too rich to go to jail. What? Or at least go to jail for a long time. The millionaire or whatever that got convicted of some sort of sleazy, nasty, slimy sexual assault and got 4 months for it. Whereas a woman dies in jail in Pennsylvania over unpaid truancy fines?
Exactly, and that was with his stepdaughter or something like that.
Yeah, it was real creepy.
Yeah, I kind of think somehow we'll wake up and get a clue, but I'm starting to doubt that, you know. And maybe global warming is the best thing to happen to this planet. And I don't like thinking that way, but I just, you know, maybe, you know, with there's been 4 or 5 mass extinctions, maybe it's time for another one. Is that a little bit too depressing to talk about?
Well, I mean, no. It may not be a matter of whether it's the... We see, those of us who live in reality world, Jim, understand that... And it's taken a while to get there. It really has. But we understand that when we talk about global climate change, we are talking about an existential crisis. A crisis related to our ability to go on existing. This is no aesthetic discussion. Just like with mountaintop removal, I've lost all ability to be patient with people who want to talk about birds, bugs, beetles, and butterflies. And people who say, I want to save the mountains. You know what? I want to save the people who live on the mountains and at the foot of the mountains and around the mountains and on the side of the mountains. Because it's the whole, you know, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one to hear it, does it make a sound? Everything about this planet is subjectively perceived. And so when we talk about saving the planet or killing the planet, as I've mentioned before, that's one of those that makes me rend my garments and sit in sackcloth and ashes. Because we are not going to destroy the planet. If every nuclear device and every nuclear power plant and every hydrocarbon were suddenly set off, we would not destroy the planet. It would continue to orbit the sun, and the sun would continue in its path, but the ability of humans to live upon it would be compromised, and we would be dealing with an extinction event. And that's part of the thing that people have a hard time getting their heads around. If you, for instance, if you go somewhere in the South that where Jesus has just sent a tornado to wipe out a town full of his followers, and you start trying to talk to them about saving the planet, they're going to pick up one of the bricks from their blown over houses and pummel you with it.
I know.
If, on the other hand, well, hell, you live down there. On the other hand, however, if you start talking about the real world impact, then everything changes. I'm not going to go to West, I don't mean the town of West, but the geographic area. I'm not going to go to West Texas and talk climate change to them. I'm going to go and talk to them about the fact that they don't have any water anymore. And they don't have any water anymore because the fracking industry has ruined their water supply. It has drained their water supply. There's 30 communities, 30 towns in the western part of Texas that ain't going to have any water. And if you can get an agreement on that, then, you know, then you can start the conversation toward why that is.
Yeah, but even then, I've kind of noticed it was kind of like that my quote-unquote disrespect toward this Episcopal priest or whatever, just kind of way one of the bartenders kind of took it. You know, she was, I don't know what her trip was, and it was, you know, it was no big deal, but I just found it kind of weird her, you know. It wasn't a big deal, but she kind of made a big deal out of it because I guess I didn't get down and do whatever the Episcopal or whatever version of his, one of the 3,000 versions of religion that there are. I just find it all ironically comical and, because he believes in, you know, the tooth fairy, I should respect that belief. No. You can believe in it, but I'm not going to think you have some great insight, you know?
Well, I don't have a lot of regard for discussions about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. And whoever that goober was who sat down and that bishop in England who sat down and laboriously worked out the generations of man to figure out, I mean, he worked it down to the day, the date, and the time of creation.
Yeah, I think I read that somewhere. It's like 12 noon.
Yeah, on a Thursday or something.
And then, you know, what about other cultures? You know, they have their creation mythology. I mean, we're only, what, there's 1 billion Christians, quote-unquote, on a planet. That's only 1/7. You know, you got a lot of Buddhists and Hindus and Muslims. And you know, we got who have their, theories. I don't know. Maybe I just try and look at things objectively. But Nat, before I let you go, you saw what Bobby Jindal did. Malloy was talking about it the other day.
Where he sort of backmastered the litigation to get BP out of a jam.
Yeah, I know a lawyer too that really effed up there. You know. Put a financial burden because they'd already spent a lot of money preparing for the case, and then he says no, and then it's just like, well, come on, like Malloy was ranting it, yeah, well, come on in, come screw up Louisiana even more. You know, I mean, it's just like West Virginia with the coal. Come on,
blow it up. See, and because I'm a paranoid, I can say with confidence that all of this war on coal business, Jim, is a subterfuge. All the coal industry knows what time it is, and they know they're going to be out of Appalachia sooner rather than later. And what they're trying to do is keep squealing loudly enough to keep people looking. You know, watch the birdie. Watch my left hand. Don't watch my right hand picking your freaking pocket. Yeah, watch over here. Oh, look, a squirrel. And it's all just subterfuge to keep people whipped into a frenzy long enough for them to get everything there is to get and then get the hell out. I mean, this state and this region and other parts of the country have seen what happens when boom and bust economies hit the bust side.
See, that goes to what I was talking with my sister-in-law about over the phone earlier, and I was trying to explain to her that the corporations don't give a rat's ass about you or your children or your environment, and then she starts getting into the Democrat-Republican thing, and she doesn't like either party, and
That's Republican talk.
Yeah, exact, dude. I read between the lines. I learned that. You realize pretty quick, or I did, that it's, let's kind of discontinue this so-called dialogue, because it's not going to go anywhere, and you're going to, whatever the oil company, I hope you're happy with your, when another oil spill happens, and I hope I'm out of here. I felt, you almost feel like saying something like that,
Yeah.
It's like, good. You almost start rooting for the end of the world.
You have to resist that.
I know. But it's just like, I told you, but they don't want to listen. But, okay. So I'm going to let somebody clear the phone, let somebody else get on. Thanks for letting me rant, get my little...
That's all right. You can't bottle that stuff up. It's bad for you.
Oh, you got to talk. I have to talk to somebody once in a while, All right. And thanks for the inbottle. Let somebody else on.
All right. Take care, Jim. Bye now. I mean, this is... Don't make no mistake. This is therapy for me, too. Jim talking about how... all the sects believe that they've got it sorted out and figured out and nailed down and pressed and shaken together. Reminded me of a song that I heard a long time ago by a band called the Bastard Fairies.
Oh, you Mormons who like cussing, you are going to hell. Oh, you preachers who like fucking, you are going to hell. Little boys that choke the chicken, you are going to hell. It's the nature of evolution, the dinosaurs went to hell. Hell, 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 it's a wonderful place. It's a place of fire and brimstone. Politicians, you are going to hell. Magic Jesus apparitions send you to hell. Buddhist monks without God, you are going to hell. Those of you dissecting frogs, you are going to hell. Hell, 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 it's a wonderful place. It's a place of fire and stone.
Yeah, like I said, there's just something pleasant about that little bit, because everybody is, according to someone else. A couple of notes coming in from Robert in Australia. One, regarding Tony Abbott referenced in the Green News Report this evening. Robert writes, "Nothing Tony Abbott just said about addressing global warming will be done. Australia is open for business," said Tony Abbott last week. His comments about global warming will become non-core promises. Wow, that sounds weaselly. Or something we will get around to eventually. Hopefully we can vote him out in a few years. Oh, and the Liberal Party has made a complete mess of the national broadband network, so it looks like I'm stuck with a dead slow ADSL 2+ connection for a few years yet. I'm just curious, Robert, what are your up and down speeds? Let's see how bad it really is. Let's see. Robert, with regard to my reference to Victorian England and their fascination with ankles, Bob Leg was considered an offensive word in Victorian England, so much so that many better-off people had the legs of their tables covered with cloth, as even the legs of tables were considered offensive, because leg reminded them of sex. Right, because Victorian men could not be trusted not to hump the dining room table. repression, closets, you know. Note from Jessica. She says, subject line, oh, bullshit. I think Jim rubbed her the wrong way a little bit. Oh, bullshit. Boys will be boys, not DNA, not even culture. It's becoming convenient excuse. If you objectify a woman, you make distinctions to how you will treat her. Pretty, very nice, okay, maybe nice. Yeah. And I don't think Jim was trying to carve. I think Jim was observing a fault in himself. But anyway, I get it. I get it, Jessica. And as I actually responded to Jessica and said, you know, I take it as my personal obligation to try to teach my son about how not to objectify women and to point it out when I see it or hear it so that he'll identify it and not do it, hopefully, and try to point out to our daughters how not to allow themselves to be objectified. There's a lot more to teaching youngins than just teaching them how to read and write and, you know, go potty in the right place. Sheesh, who knew? Let's see. There is other stuff to. We've got a story. I've got a story from a couple of days ago about the West Virginia water crisis, which, don't tell anybody, is still going on. And in particular, it struck me because it's something that we talked about here that nobody else was talking about anywhere else that now turns out to be factual. And a story about my congressman. My poor, sad congressman. Let's keep that for a little bit later and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I am.
Okay, well, real quick, Bob, I'll try to keep this one brief because of the phones. Number one, I just ate some good German, you know.
Oh, the shipment arrived. What did you get, Bill?
Brats and some German bologna and some sourdough bread, that's all.
Wow. How do you feel about spicy?
The budget is the budget, Bob.
Yeah, I know, but how do you feel about spicy stuff?
Oh, well, if I can get it, I'll eat it. My stomach doesn't rebel at that. My stomach rebels at the word like work, you know.
Well, knowing your site limitations, I don't know how hard it is for you to negotiate a website. But when we were in D.C., like I said, we were gifted with a sausage, which it took the patience of a saint to do. But we were told by our kind benefactor to take it out of its vacuum wrapping and then hang it and let it air dry for several days, which we did. And Ferg could wait no longer today and said, we gotta taste it, Dad. I can't wait. So I relented. And we did. It had hung for about a week. And we lit into that thing, and I mean just this flavor explosion, smoky and super spicy. And if you on the Binkerts.com website, if you go to the salami and smoked section, you'll find it, and it's specifically referred to as being it's done in a ring, and it's referred to as being spicy. I think it's like a Debretziner ring or something like that. Oh my God, is it good?
There's places around here where you can get the stuff, but I still think their stuff is superior. So that's the problem there. When you find the really good stuff, I shouldn't be eating it at my age. I shouldn't be getting out of bed. In fact, I'm having battles with the one guy who benefited me so much because he's giving me this treatment where, oh, you're half senile. I want to keep your mouth shut. You know, I'm only half saying it. The other half can be pure angry disgust, you know. Which brings me to what you were talking about earlier. Let's talk about the sports franchise real quick. They have built a new baseball stadium, a new a rink. We had a hockey rink that, and basketball rink that was located halfway between Cleveland and Akron. And it was not easy to get to because I grew up being able to walk to the place that I watched the American Hockey League. He goes, well, how can you watch that minor league? I said, well, there's only six major league teams. I think you saw some. Well, I saw a guy named Johnny Bauer play, goaltender, who's Hall of Fame. At age 38 or 9, Toronto called him up, and Bauer won two cups for him. And the Glover brothers and a few other people who played down here that were superior players. With only six teams in the NHL, you saw some top-flight minor league players, you know.
Yeah, because there wasn't much room at the top.
Yeah, and there was no Russians playing. They were, yeah, any Russian. I remember that 75 thing where they had a head-to-head competition. The NHL, I think, won it by one game. Out of the seven, they finished one ahead of the Russians. And in Canada, just about had a breakdown during the Winter Olympics when the Russians won the cup for the in Olympic hockey for the first time. That was like the people were insulted, you know. So these sports things, the problem is the building of these things. Particularly the Municipal Stadium, which was. It was supposed to be for part of a thing called the Billy Rose Aquacade in the late 30s. That's something you got to Google to find out what that was. And because they were still playing at League Park where my mother saw the 20 Indians win a pennant, you know. And Municipal Stadium was not really designed for baseball. It was a funny-looking park, although it was so big that they have a picture of 86,000 fans down there, I think, during the 48 season. Which for a baseball game, that's a huge crowd. Was a huge crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And the Browns played there, too. I went down there when I was, I think my first game was eighth grade, and it was a student ticket for 50 whole cents.
Oh, hey, Bill, I gotta tell you about something I saw the other day on Facebook, because you might get a giggle out of this. Somebody somewhere was giving this away. It's a coloring book that's been produced. And it's quite satirical. And the cover of the coloring book shows a guy sitting on a couch with a long face and a big frown, and he's wearing an orange jersey with the number 19 on it. And the name of the coloring book, Bill, is Why Is Daddy Sad on Sundays?
Yeah, well, yeah, but these Browns fans in the years since... the games they played against Denver and lost them to a close. They never have been to the Super Bowl yet. After the team from 50 through 55 went to the NFL championship when there was no AFL. And, in fact, during those years, there was only three teams that played in the NFL championship. The two from the Western Conference were the L.A. Rams, who had been the Cleveland Rams in 45, and the Detroit Lions. That was it. Nobody made that. It wasn't until 56 the Bears played the Giants. And then in 57 the Browns were back in against the Lions, and the Lions got even the Browns beat the Lions 56-14. And Graham, what was supposed to be Graham's last game, he ran for three touchdowns and passed for three more. What a player he was to be able to catch. And Jimmy Brown, of course, that's another story. Mr. Jimmy Brown, I'll have to call him, because he was something else. I can't, except that guy from your school, Mr. Huff.
Oh, Sam, yeah.
Yeah, he made it tough on Jim. But he's about the only one that could consistently do it. So that's that phase of it is building of stadium stuff you were talking about. This is exactly, I remember when they were selling this stuff, these sports talk show hosts were pandering this stuff like they were on a street corner in a red light district. It was real. I got my language, my control. Like I know where the name Storyville came from. Are you hip to that?
No.
And it was a councilman in New Orleans who set up a law to where the the red light district should be. Councilman Story. And then the name was Storyville, and then the Navy closed it, I think, in 1917 when we got into World War One. They had to keep the sailors away from those ladies, you know. Because instead of, I mean, they may die of a venereal disease instead of stopping a bullet. I know I'm a cynical person when I say that, but I'm just saying that I don't care what kills you. If it's a bullet or it's a disease, it's still killing you.
My father actually told me that when they got to Hawaii, when he was in the Navy, that the Navy actually maintained its own red light district. The Navy was actually, you know, a pimp. And they would tell sailors going on liberty, go to these houses, but not to those houses. Ostensibly because, you know, disease issues and so forth.
Social disease, sure. As they call it, social disease, today, I think being friendly with your neighbor, getting along with your fellow citizens seems to be a social disease today, Bob. I don't, you know. Something to be avoided by a lot of people. Yeah. That's another story. But I remember getting in an argument with one of these sports talkers. I basically accused him of being nothing but a whore for the sports industry because this is how I made his living, talking about it.
That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah. Talk show hosts, except for certain ones.
you mean the broke ones?
Yeah, those guys, yeah. The guys that, you have a callers like me who, so cheap they can't pay attention, much less anything else, you know. The old joke goes. So that thing got me when you started talking, boy, man, you on the money with that one. And then the second one was the, Tesla. They turned over their knowledge to the rest of this stinking industry? Is that what they did?
No, they turned over their patents to the world.
Well, you know what? Now, this is talk that made the rounds through piston heads, as we called ourselves in my youth, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of male listeners and a few females shaking their heads saying, yeah, piston heads. Well, they say, again, it's a matter of cheapness, Bob. I'd rather learn how to do the damn thing myself and, you know, because it was so much cheaper. I mean, I could buy enough oil for a couple oil changes for $10 and a couple filters for $3. What the hell more did I? Why should I go pay $30 or $35 to somebody else, you know, to do something simple like that?
Right.
That was a damn, that's probably, I don't know how much work your dad did around the house, but I'm sure he did a lot more than people are able to do today. I know how much you must do. What kind of a plumber are you, Bob?
Lousy. Yeah. You know, I go and I get my plastic pipe, and I go and I get my pipe glue. I open the pipe glue and pass out.
Well, that's true, too. Why do you think my generation of young kids, when I was when I was between 10 and 15, so that's between 53 and 58, we built a lot of model cars and planes. I wonder why. Why do you feel so funny after you got through glue and all that stuff?
I'm a little sleepy.
It was poison, Bob. It was outright poison. But getting back to Tesla, what we talked about years ago was that you could, the reason cars didn't get superb gas mileage is somebody held a patent on a carburetor that was ran from here to hell, you know?
Oh, you mean the famous legendary 100-mile-a-gallon carb?
Yep. And I wonder how much of that stuff actually did happen, because the auto, when you study, there's some good books out there on the auto business. I mean, you know Henry Ford and his buddy Harry Bennett, don't you?
Oh, help me here.
Bennett was his right-hand man.
Okay.
There's a book called, They Never Called Him Henry, I think it was the title, and it had a couple stories in it. Ford and Bennett would arrive every day at this one gate, and this old-timer would greet him nicely every morning. Ford told Bennett, that's a good man, get him a car. So they got him a Model would have been an A. And so every morning they come in there and the guy was shining that A. Cleaning it up, shining it up. Ford one day looks at Ben and says, that old man pays too much attention to that car, steal it. So these are, my uncle was a big fan of book reading, and his thing was the movie business too. God. There's a movie book called A World of Their Own, which I would recommend for anybody who wants to get a knowledge of the earliest days of the movie business. Quite the trip. And you know how many battle royals guys like Bogart and them were having with the Warner Brothers and, our one buddy Jim, he's a movie man too. You know, I'm not that much of it, but I was exposed to it. My mom's brother was close to me and he taught me an awful lot of this, that, and the other thing, you know. But getting back to the cars, you exactly hit it on the head. We've said for years that, Ralph Nader, unsafe at any speed. Bob, do you know how many people I know had Corvairs and loved them? I worked in an office with some very attractive young women in their 20s, and they loved their Corvairs. But I drove VW Super Beetles and a Ghia, so...
Oh, the Carmont Ghia, what a beautiful automobile.
Yeah. Well, I put that VW Beetle into a spin getting on the freeway, and it did a figure-eight loop after it hit the ice and came to rest facing oncoming traffic. Luckily for me, there wasn't any.
Oh, by the way, you just got a tweet. You got a tweet in from our buddy Isaac, Bill. He says, tell Mr. Yeah. Stress I'm an excellent plumber.
Oh.
I figure there's a...
I don't know about me being an excellent plumber. I told I've been full of the product that plumbing is needed to deal with. People have told me that, but... Maybe they don't. Because, man, Bob, the first person I'll go after to smack around is myself. Because if I insult the hell out of myself and I can laugh at it, you're next, buddy. The way it was.
Yeah. No mercy.
That's one thing.
No mercy.
I'll let you go with one thing. Pardon me?
I said, no mercy.
Yeah, but do you think these guys are going to actually take that knowledge and put it to any good use if there's no profit in it for them?
But that's
going to reduce their profits.
Look at how open sourcing has worked on the internet. No, this is an effort to try to make electric cars profitable, and they are profitable as long as.
Sure.
I mean, there are technological challenges. Tesla is amazing in part simply because of the extended mileage that they've managed to work into their vehicle, because you know the Nissan Leaf has like a 70-mile range and it's a tiny little bubble teardrop car, and here's the Tesla S that is a performance damn near sport. Well, it's a touring sports car, and with one package you can get 285 miles on a single charge. And with the supercharger, it's about 30 to 45 minutes to get a full charge. So when that infrastructure pops up, everything changes. If I was sitting around on a big pile of money, I'd be driving a Tesla, not for the prestige, but for the manifest joy of being unhooked from the oil companies. I mean, you want to talk about going outside and doing the happy dance, Bill.
And the oil companies and the coal companies, they carry a relationship, you know, in many ways. I mean, some of them might be even practically related through ownership.
Sure.
But what they do, what they're doing to the world, the two of them, that's where they come in contact, where they walk arm in arm. Is what they're doing to the. I mean, well, me, I've got a couple of grandkids that I never see, but, you know, you guys that have families, this oil thing can shorten things. We don't know how much it's going to. And not only that, the war situation. God, don't even get me going on the Iraq situation, you know? Here we go again, Bob.
If If the Republicans have their way, and what's it to them? That's somebody else's kid they're going to die in the heat and the sand.
Well, that's the amazing thing about our Civil War, and this is on both sides of the both flags. Do you know how many rich men were out there waving a sword around and stopping a bullet? How many landowners and guys... The regimental leaders in a lot of cases were guys who were elected to lead the regiment because they were big shots in the local area where the regiment was recruited. I mean, the whole recruitment thing of the Civil War, it was nothing close to the U.S. Army. And then I heard somebody today talking about the Maine. The Maine blew up and there was a couple more ships from the same class as the Maine. The blue sky high. I wish somebody would Google that, because I'm not... But this guy is saying that, because you know how the ships were built in families.
Yeah.
And the Maine blew and opened the war with Cuba, but then a couple other of these ships went bye-bye, too, due to...
The coal bunkers were blowing up.
Yeah. Yeah. The coal bunkers were too close to the engines... Or something that was causing, or the gunpowder was too close to the coal bunkers. And if the coal bunkers went, the gunpowder went, and if the gunpowder went, the whole damn thing went.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the Iowa.
Sure.
You know, I'll keep coming back to that one great book on the Castles of Steel, the First World War history of the British and
the Dreadnoughts
fleets. Yeah, the whole idea of those two fleets, how Wilhelm was trying to catch the British fleet, you know, building ships like they were, you know. Because that was it. The ship was the way you poke your nose, your finger in somebody else's eye. The battle fleets, that's what they were for. But yeah, it just goes on and on. And I just, but I'd have called, to me, if Tesla, I hope that, if stuff is picked up, it's done in a positive manner and not just bought up by some companies who sit on
the patent. You know, it's interesting you would mention that because Asa mentioned the same thing to me. Once it's bought up, Bill, I mean, or once it's out there in the world of open source, you can't buy it up.
Yeah.
Because everybody starts looking at this stuff and modifying. And that's what makes it sort of tough for them to isolate. Now, I guess presumably if a substantial modification is made to a design or a patent, then whoever did that could take it back out of open source. But I think there are even and I'm really out of my depth here, but I think there are even implicit agreements that if you take open source stuff, you have to leave it open source.
Yep. That's good. Because otherwise they'll sit on it. I'll let you with one more thing, and somebody can... I'm sure there are folks out there who know more about this than I do. I used to work for a company where two brothers, one of the guys worked for Chrysler. He was an engineer for Chrysler. And he was building in the 1960s, cars that would run on something like perfume. Turbine?
Oh, yeah, that Chrysler.
Yeah, the Chrysler. He was one of the head engineers. So he happened to bring it to the point where I was working. I was just one of those. Sometimes I think I walk through life like a clown, turn a corner, and something's happening in front of me. It had nothing to do with my knowledge or interest. It was that blind freaking luck sometimes, you know? It's like when I started playing the house seriously, a woman was going to Lake Erie College. She said, this Paul Butterfield band is here along with the record. They're playing at Lake Erie College. I stood next to Mike Bloomfield for the whole evening talking to a master guitar player.
Wow.
Michael was a talker. You can check that out on the internet.
That reminds me of something. There's a benefit concert going on in my hometown this Sunday. And, God, I would crawl across ground glass to be there. It's going to be Patterson Hood, Mike Cooley, and Jason Isbell appearing at the same venue for the first time in years, and it's all being done to benefit a wonderful man by the name of Terry Pace, who is beloved in that community for what he has done for entertainment and the arts. It's a tiny little venue, only 600 and some odd seats, and it will. It's just about the hottest ticket in the entire country right now.
Hard to come by.
I could have come by it, but there's just no way to get there. But it's gonna be one magic evening, one night only. Ain't gonna happen again.
Well, there's so many great performers that never really make a big name, but in their own town, in their own area, they're that's what I run across from people. These kids who look at me like I'm. Where did I leave my halo? Well, I lost that a long time ago, you know. But so they look at you like you're. No, it was called, in my case, it was the right place at the right time. You know, that's all that was, as far as Cleveland's reputation and crap. And going to Detroit, opening for Cream, and going back with Three Dog Night and Steppenwolf the next time. Jesus, God, then the MC5. I mean, it's like those things just happened. I had a good booker who's now a retired professor from Wisconsin. you know, it's Bob. How many times? You know from the radio business, how many guys got where they are by bumping into somebody at the right time?
It's everything, just serendipity.
Well,
there's a great short story out there by Mark Twain, Bill, called an account of Captain Stormfield's visit to heaven. It was the last short story that Twain ever published. And in it, he puts forward this theory of heaven, whereby, well, the whole thing's worth the read, but the thing that always struck me is that in the gatherings of people who were great, who are deemed great, he mentions along the way a barber who never did anything but barber, but was actually a greater poet than Shakespeare or any of the great, he was the greatest poet the world had ever known, but nobody knew it because he just spent all of his time being a barber. And that concept is very real. There are people who reach pinnacles of achievement who have worked their asses off, because almost nobody just stumbles into it. There's hellish work involved all the way around. But one person will have a serendipitous interaction with someone that somebody won't. Or a person will make a choice somewhere along the way that makes everything turn out completely differently. You know, life is not a linear progression. Life is a series of choices made in intersections on a web. And if you've ever, looked at how a spider's web works, well, the spider will be sitting there in the center of the web, and a gnat or a fly or something will fly into it, and the spider will immediately know which way to go based on where the vibration on the web has come from. And that's life.
Yeah, well, I've known the wrong way to go on several occasions, but, on the other hand, I mean, my buddy did do so much for me, but he started to give me this, you're an old moron stuff, and that's... You keep watching my left hand while my right foot binds your testicles eventually. That was the way I was brought up, which isn't right either, but it does what neighborhood you live in, Bob, that's all. You survive somehow. But yeah, it's so much stuff's out there, and I would hope to see Tesla do something, but the rumor has always been that and I don't know whatever happened to that big Chrysler. That engine that would run on anything, I don't know what happened to it, how it disappeared. Ray Huebner was one brother, and I forget the other guy who was the head engineer on that project for Chrysler, and wouldn't that have solved a lot of problems? Cars that ran on, And there was a little old lady, I'll leave you with this one, there was a little old lady in the neighborhood I lived in when I was in my late teens, early 20s. she had a Baker Electric.
Wow.
And she was still hustling around in a Baker. So electrics, that goes back to the early 1900s, doesn't it?
Yeah. Electric cars are not a novel idea anymore.
Nope.
Everything... There was a steam powered automobile.
Stanley Steamer. Yes,
yeah.
We have a great car museum here in Cleveland that was owned by the guy that ran TRW owned it. It's still here. It was called a Thompson Automobile. It was Thompson Products, which became TRW. And the museum is still here, and we spend a lot of our youth walking through there, marveling at these antiques, and oh God, you know, it was just what a time. In a lot of ways, it was a great time to be around. And weird shit. Saturday afternoon, 1950. I guess something on the radio that said there's a war going on in Korea. It was Sunday in Korea, Saturday here. You know, the radio was always on in my house. My mother was a news freak, so I can remember some guy named Chiang Kai-shek being chased out of China by some guy named Mao Zedong. That was, what, 49 or something? I was 6 years old. But stuff sticks with you. When somebody keeps telling you, this is important. Oh, okay, well then. Anyway, I'll let you go because we need room for people. Take care.
All right, you take care, Bill. Have a good evening. Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. A couple of things to consider out there. That I sincerely do have to get to this evening. In all the, first of all, I taped an interview this afternoon with the folks at the Real News Network, and I'll let you know when that thing comes out. Talking about the EPA standards and the emissions standards. And you know pretty well what my position was in that regard. Well, my poor old congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, who is in the election fight of his entire political existence, the biggest one he's ever been in. He's running against a guy who comes out of the Huntington area and ran as a Democrat to get into the state legislature and then immediately turncoated and declared himself to be what he really is, which is a no-good, low-down, lower in a snake's belly in a wagon rut, repig-licking teabagger. Name's Evan Jenkins. He's a sleazy-ass gut bucket. Doesn't like people being able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Bastard. So they're trying to out-coal each other, and frankly, I'm glad I don't have cable here, because if I had cable here, I would be inundated with the, Nick Joe Rahal's a son of a bitch. Evan Jenkins is one, too. Evan Jenkins loves coal. No, Nick Joe Rahal loves coal more and longer and deeper and harder and faster. One of the benefits of being an incumbent is you can do stuff while you're in office. So in a pathetic, absolutely shameful effort to get on his knees and wait for his masters in the coal industry to scratch his tummy, Nick Rahal introduced this past Tuesday a bill in the House of Representatives called the Protection and Accountability Regulatory Act of 2014. Bless his heart, Sparky put this on my Facebook page. There are people putting awesome stuff on my Facebook page, by the way. If you Facebook, it's a great place to find news stories you might not otherwise notice. I see stuff that I wouldn't notice. People like Sparky and Carl and Joe and a number of other folks putting excellent reading on my Facebook page. Just look for it. We'll friend right up, and you're more than welcome to chime in. It's part and parcel of how we grow this, as a matter of fact. The more page views and visits that thing gets, the more page views and visits the Horn homepage gets, then that's how we broaden the audience. Last night, which was a very grim fundraising night, Leo got us started early in the afternoon, and Leo helped out again this evening. Leo is a brand new listener and a brand new member of the Horn Family Commune congregation, and it's magnificent to see participation and to have commentary and interaction that goes on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's kind of the conversation is what makes things special here. But anyway, Sparky posted this on my Facebook page. And has just about learned to read minds because he said, well, here's Bob's Thursday thorn. And it is, oh, Jesus, the Protection and Accountability Regulatory Act of 2014. Guess what the Protection and Accountability Regulatory Act of 2014 does? Three guesses, two don't count. Yep, it rolls back that there Obama administration EPA war on coal. It would actually nullify right out of the gate before they're ever approved, implemented, before the lawsuits have been filed, right at just straight up, it would nullify the EPA carbon dioxide rules that the Supreme Court of the United States told the EPA they had to promulgate. Wow. Not only would this bill be an act of nullification against the EPA doing its regulatory job in regard to carbon dioxide emissions, it also goes further and would nullify other EPA attempts to limit carbon pollution from new coal plants or grandfathered in modified coal-fired power plants, reconstructed coal-fired power plants. And the only thing that could change any of that would be if Congress took affirmative steps to actually allow that to happen. See, this is an assault on government. This is a part of the coal insurgency. This is the last dying, strangled howl of the coal industry as it seeks to wrest from Central Appalachia the very last that it can before it leaves us in the dark and still of the night to wake up completely bereft. But it gets worse. My Congressman Nick Rahal also included a statement when he introduced his bill. Duct tape, hockey puck. We're done with tennis balls, really. We're past tennis balls. We are so past tennis balls. Last week, the EPA unleashed its latest assault on the jobs. Got to spell it. Got to say it that way. It's spelled J-A-W-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-B-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z. Last week, the EPA unleashed its latest assault on the jobs and livelihoods. Interesting how the word livelihood includes the word live. Livelihoods of our coal miners. The EPA needs to get their head out of the clouds and come back down to earth, where the rest of us must live and work. We don't need more regulation to solve our energy challenges. We need more innovation. Livelihoods. Okay, so coal miners can have a livelihood at the expense of other people, innocent people, who aren't getting a coal industry paycheck, who aren't getting big brown bags of money from the coal industry like Nick Rahal does. They can pay for those jobs with their lives. Nick went on to say in his little release, I have fought with our coal miners for years, defending their jobs, promoting their health and safety, and protecting the pension and health care benefits they've worked so hard to earn. So when someone picks a fight with our coal miners, I put on the gloves. This may be one whale of a fight, but I am not slugging it out alone.
Miners and their families, coal community residents, and businesses and families in West Virginia and throughout our country who rely on affordable energy have joined the fight and are making their voices heard. At which point he looks up at the coal industry. Did you come yet? No? Okay, back to it. You have no idea. Maybe you do. How infuriating a statement like that is. And I mean fury. Because this is just a matter of telling people who don't want to trade their life, an individual who doesn't want to trade her life for so that some goddamn mountaintop remover can get himself a new four-wheeler and his wife can have new bulbs in the tanning bed every year, that an innocent gets to trade her life for that. Why not just put it in plain English, Nick? I am willing to roast the entire planet and make it impossible for human beings to live on it so that I can be elected one more time and so that that crazy teabagger won't get in my office and so that I can keep getting the big checks from the coal industry. I don't give a good goddamn about a baby born with respiratory birth defects because of mountaintop removal. I don't give two shits about a mama who gets cancer and winds up not getting to ever be a grandmama because she lives near mountaintop removal. I could not care less about the untold number of children having organs removed from their bodies before they're even 15 years old because they've been breathing the filth from mountaintop removal since the moment they were born. Do I need to remind you that Nick Ray Hall is a Democrat? Oh, sure. And by the way, the war on coal, what he's having this piss-pants hissy over, by 2030, West Virginia only has to make a 20% reduction in emissions. And, according to the EPA rules, West Virginia gets to figure out its own way to do that and make its own plan. West Virginia could, for instance, promulgate a plan to help people have more energy-efficient homes and cut emissions that way, just by cutting usage. West Virginia could come up with an incentive plan to make it possible for people to install wind and solar, and emissions would be cut that way. We could maybe, like we tried to do a lot of years ago, put a big old industrial wind farm on top of Coal River Mountain, the last existing mountain in that area, and that would cut emissions. It doesn't demand technology that doesn't exist. These EPA regs are so friendly to the states that states get to basically make it up as they go along. But Nick Rahal wants more birth defects. Nick Rahal wants more cancer. Nick Rahal wants more heart disease. Jesus. It's infuriating. Truly infuriating. Sorry, I just kind of have to calm down for a second.
By the way, I have not mentioned much about fundraising this evening because we got so darn close, but we're still where we were. We are at $65 away. $65 away. Thank you, Sal, from being even. And that just means that tomorrow we would just have our regular fundraising goal. $65. Where to go next? I am almost afraid. And by the way, the phone lines are open, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178, and you are more than welcome to jump in. We had folks trying to call while I was on the air with Bill and with Jim. Because of the way the situation is set up now, only one call comes in at a time. So if you were trying to call earlier and you want to get back in, you are certainly welcome to jingle the line. What else? I told you that there was a story out there that confirms a lot of what we had been talking about during the... Oh, okay, phone call coming in. We'll get to it in a minute. Let's keep the conversation going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Bob?
Pretty good. Dave?
Yeah, Dave from Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I was enjoying that conversation you were having with Bill about Tesla and everything. You know, about, I think it was like 5 years ago, they had the two Tesla models on display over here in Portland. And I went over and I took a bunch of pictures of them, and it was awesome to see
And you're kind of a car guy too, right?
Yeah, I was in the car business all my life, so I was completely blown away by them. Yeah, they had the Model S and the other one, the sedan. The little Model S, I think the Model S is the one that's like a Honda del Sol. It's just a two seater little.
No. The Tesla S is the.
It's a sedan.
The touring sedan, the Tesla Roadster.
Yeah. They were both on display. I know these folks that have an art gallery. They do sculptural art, and they had them on display over there. It was really cool. They had a little presentation, and I'm so jazzed by that. You know, I think
it is exciting, isn't it? It's a glimpse into the future.
Yeah. It's would totally imagine if they outlawed gasoline cars and everyone had to get an electric car. Imagine what would happen in the car business. I think I would go back to selling them myself because everyone would have to get an electric car, or they'd have to retrofit with every car with
I'd be thrilled. Like I've said before, I became absolutely enamored of the Chevy Volt while I was down in Texas last fall. Dr. Allen squired me around and getting me to events and everything in his. And it's a wonderful automobile. And it's still, you know, it's still somewhat gasoline-powered, but you plug it up for 8 hours overnight, and you got 35 miles of electric car. And most folks, you know, you're not going to drive more than 35 miles a day unless you live in a rural place like this. But even if you do drive more than 35 miles a day, you're going to get some crazy mileage, like 90-some-odd miles a gallon, because of the way the engine, the gas engine is configured. This fascinated me. The air conditioner in that Chevy Volt was louder than the motor was.
The air conditioner, the same thing with the Priuses too. The air conditioner, they don't require the engine to be running. They cool like, they work completely on electricity. So, they're incredible. Yeah, I had a couple of Priuses, and I loved them. I think I actually tell you the truth. I had two Priuses, and I felt a little uncomfortable in the Prius because of the fact that it was just such a luxury car. I didn't feel like I wish they had a more economy oriented version, because I mean, you got cruise control, you got your stereo, you got the climate control system is like, you know, you set it to the temperature. It's like a luxury car. It's the quietest thing I ever drove. It's unbelievable. You know, I love those cars, and they're huge sellers. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. These American car companies are stupid for not just really focusing on that. That's the frontier. You know, once people drive a car like that, it's like when you rode in the Prius or rode in the Volt. It's like you say to yourself, like, oh my God, this is amazing. Or even in a, like a Leaf is they're when I see those cars, I just get it's exciting. It's an exciting thing. Imagine having a solar on your house with a solar charger in your car, and I mean, you're never going to go to a gas station again. Never going to pay an electric bill again. It's a new frontier.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a certain downside to electric cars insofar as we still have coal and gas generating electricity. But these solar supercharging stations that are planned, they're amazing. And if you're in the business of business, why wouldn't you adopt something like this, Dave? I had a note from Jan over in the UK a little bit ago talking about the fact that she read somewhere that Walmart is going to get off the grid. Wally World.
They're in the middle of doing it. I think they're solarizing all their plants, all their stores.
Because they've got a massive amount of roof space to work with. And can you imagine what the power bill is for a Walmart?
Imagine all of their stores. Imagine the power bill, the whole total power bill for all of their stores going away. I mean, you'd have to be insane not to want to go for that to get rid of that.
Well, I mean, the board of directors must be just sticky with glee.
Plus all the incentives, they need to keep those incentives in. But
well, for instance, when the derecho hit here a couple of summers ago, almost 2 years ago now, everybody was shut down. Well, if you've got a roof full of solar panels, you keep going.
Screw them. Screw the power company. You know what? I had this idea that I thought I wanted to share with you. It was like to lobby these people like Elon Musk and the guy, what's his name, Tom Steyer, the one that's fighting for green energy in California, and he's a billionaire. But for them to put money into putting a production plant in states like yours, like West Virginia and Kentucky and South Dakota, where they produce the green energy, they produce the solar panels, they produce the Tesla cars, the electric cars, and everything like that, to supplant and replace the jobs that will be lost with coal. And I'll bet you that people over there would just be dying for it. They need jobs, right? Don't they? Don't people need jobs over there?
Oh, badly.
They need jobs everywhere, but I mean...
No, we need... This region, this goes back to something... Do you remember when that one Kansas town was completely blown away by a tornado? And who was it? Leonardo DiCaprio came in and swore that he was going to rebuild the whole town and make it green and sustainable and all of that. Remember that?
I'm not sure I do. No.
Well, it happened. You'll just have to take my word for that.
I believe you.
We need somebody to come into West Virginia and do something like that.
Well, land is cheap over there. Property is cheap over there, isn't it?
It depends on where you are. And it depends on what you want to do with it. I mean, I pay more in taxes for this house on an acre, this fallen down house on an acre of ground. I pay more property taxes on this than a coal company pays on 1,000 acres of unmined coal reserves.
Right. Well, in other words, they give these guys with buckets of cash incentives. So if these guys were to come in with buckets of cash and say, hey.
No, we need somebody to come in and show that it can be done, that there is another way besides coal. And you know what? We need them to be militant about it. We need people to come in here and say, we are coming in here to do battle with the coal industry. We're coming in here to drive a knife in its heart.
Right. Well, be subtly militant in a way that, like, kill them with kindness, give people jobs.
Right. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a whole bunch of jobs, and we're going to pay money that is equivalent to working for the coal industry.
Exactly. Even
because see, that's the draw. There aren't many coal. There were 100,000 coal miners in West Virginia in 1980, something like that. There are less than 15,000 now. Of that, less than 5,000 or so are working on mountaintop removal sites because it doesn't require a lot of human labor. It requires a lot of machine work. But
yeah.
But the thing is, if you came in here and the jobs were good, it would mean everything. Whereas because one of the things that sustains the coal industry is the fact that it is not, and I'm not trying to be an elitist liberal snob about this, it is not education intensive. Okay? You really can, I mean, there aren't that many jobs, but it's been a culture where theoretically you can quit high school at 16 or 17 and go get a job learning how to run a D9 cat on a mountaintop removal plot. It's real. Now you have
you said there's only 5,000 jobs doing that though. I mean, give me a break.
Right, because it's ever decreasing. It's going away, and it's not the tree huggers who are making it go away. They're running out of coal, and that's the conversation that's hard to have. You want to look at somebody like Nick Rahal and say, "Yeah, Nick, sure, protect those jobs." But the coal company's not going to is not in the welfare business. They're not going to pay people $60,000 a year to drive bulldozers around when there isn't any coal to get. What are you going to do about the future, Nick? And the problem is that coal has become such an orthodoxy in this state that if you mention the fact that there's not going to be coal, you're a heretic. Damn tree hugger. There's always going to be coal. There's little Keebler elves down in the middle of the earth that's just making more coal all the time and sending it up through the Titanic plates for us to mine for America because Jesus.
Yeah, I was checking out this map. I was reading this article about how renewable energy is doing in various states, and it's incredible how much money is being spent in states, especially like California is one of the top states that's spending money on renewables. But there are so many jobs, and there's so many billions of dollars. It's incredible how many billions of dollars are being spent in California compared to other states. But you know, they have these various states, and you could look on the state, and it would tell you how much money was being spent in the various states. But you know, states like West Virginia and Kentucky and a lot of the Midwest, there just wasn't any. The states were just like grayed out. There was nothing that was recordable being spent there, and I think that's what they need to do. They want to change people's public opinion. They've got to attack where the economy is the weakest, where the people are just suffering the most. I believe in building the economy from the bottom up, and helping the poorest places get on their feet and change their mind about things.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it, I think.
But you would be surprised how hard it is to have that conversation in a place like this. You really would, Dave.
Well, if they just came in, not don't even have the conversation, just if they were just to come in and say, we're opening a plant here, or just for them to just approach the state legislators and say,
yeah, Dave, I'm not naysaying anything you're suggesting.
Sure.
But you really have to have a grip on the level of dysfunction in Central Appalachia. I'm at pains to really explain it. But if you came in and said, if you're a multi-billionaire titan of industry, and you come in and say, I'm going to build a solar power plant. I'm going to build a solar panel factory, and then we're going to fan out and start selling solar panels in West Virginia. Do you realize that the legislature would start moving to keep that plant from coming in?
You think they would even if they offered the money?
Yes.
They said,
yes.
Money. I have
yes.
money.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I mean, we've got real-world experience with this. Coal River Mountain Watch put forward a plan to use Coal River Mountain as an industrial wind farm instead of blowing it up. And Coal River Mountain Watch went to a Raleigh County Commission meeting and showed them how much more money was going to be coming their way via that wind farm than the mountain being used to as a resource extraction site for mountaintop removal coal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raleigh County Commission's response was, "We don't like it when you force us to choose. We want the coal. We want the mountaintop removal jobs."
Hmm. Interesting.
It is extremely unfriendly in this state to try to install solar panels.
Really?
Oh yeah. This state. Look, my senator Joe Manchin, when he was governor, his renewable energy portfolio included burning tires as renewable energy.
Burning tires.
I ain't kidding. It's not a joke. As I've said before, when my son won the Golden Horseshoe Award, which is coveted in this state among eighth graders, Joe Manchin addressed the young scholars and said, "One of these days we may have wind and solar, but right now we've got to depend on coal because wind and solar are the energy of the future. But we have to live in the present."
Yeah, I think he's pretty set in his ways. Well, I think persistence is going to do it. Persistence, so you got to just keep hammering on these bastards. Keep it up. Keep saying, well, I think lobbying these billionaires is the way to do it, since talking to politicians anymore is just a waste of time. I think seems more and more like might as well just talk to the CEO.
No, we just have to have different politicians.
Well, I don't know. They all seem to get bought off. I mean,
No, not all of them. Not all of them. Not all of them. There are good ones. There just aren't enough good ones. You know, for every Bernie Sanders, there's 30 Rand Pauls and Ted Cruz's and Louis Gohmert's and Steve King's and et cetera.
Yeah, well, there's one less Eric Cantor, at least.
Right, and he's probably going to be replaced by an absolute loon that makes Eric Cantor look like Everett Dirksen, the king of compromise.
Oh, well, what's the guy? Who? What's his name? The guy that's the shoe-in to replace him?
Brat. David Brat.
No, not Brat. I mean, the guy that's the shoe-in to replace Cantor is a majority leader.
Oh.
I was just reading about him. I was just reading about him.
He's from California, isn't he?
Yeah, he's from Bakersfield. You know, it's funny. I was reading up on this guy because I was just checking up on that. And he's from district in California that comprises Bakersfield and that kind of south end of the San Joaquin Valley, and that's, boy, that is real oil company country. I mean, it used to be. I remember years ago, about 25 years ago, I had finished technical school and I had to take this test out at the Bakersfield Community College smog check test out at Bakersfield Community College, and it's up on the top of this hill. And I had gotten there the day before because it was on a Monday morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning. So I just said, I was living in LA and I decided to drive up to Bakersfield and stay the night. So I would be fresh in the morning, and study for my test, be ready. But I had driven up there on a Sunday afternoon to the Bakersfield Community College, which is on the top of this big hill there near Bakersfield, and you look over all of these grasshoppers and oil derricks, and it's big oil country over there. They used to be. I think they're pretty much petered out now. Maybe they're fracking down there. I don't know. But it's I know where this guy's sentiments are, I'm sure. But, you know, they're turning to solar down there, like, in a big way in California. It's the trend of the future. It's got to win. It's going to win. It's got to win. I just want to see it win as fast as possible.
Yeah,
that's the way I'm looking at it, you know, and going
and
going,
see that's why, Dave, that talking about climate change in other parts of the country without addressing climate change in Appalachia is a net loser. The fact of the matter is, the easiest win we could have in the climate change struggle in this country would be to simply end mountaintop removal, because it is not necessary for energy, for electricity production. It's largely an export product, and it is meaningless except as to the damage it does to the innocent people who have to live with it. You know, we can talk about carbon capture and sequestration and carbon capture and storage and cap and trade and cap and tax and on and on and on. At the end of the day, however, the simplest way to deal with carbon pollution is to leave the carbon in the ground and let the forests cover the carbon the way, because that is the evolved systems approach of this planet to dealing with that issue.
Yeah.
Leave what's there in the ground. Let the forests do what forests do.
Exactly. Exactly. You guys have a lot of forests out there in West Virginia too, don't you?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we've got a sizable portion of national forest. There's a lot of managed forest land because humongous swaths of this state are owned by Westvaco, which is a paper company.
Right.
And as of about 1900, I've been told by the old timers, you know, this state was completely deforested. There are no old-growth forests in this state. If you see what passes for a forest in West Virginia, it's going to be mostly trees, no bigger around than anything you can get your arms around.
Sure, sure. It's the same over here in Oregon. I mean, we're known for, you know, the forests and all of that, but if you go out on the Coast Range, it's pretty much been raked out, and you've got much smaller trees, and there are all these, you know, new Douglas firs that grow at four times the rate. The wood is not
right, and this is, you know, this is supposed to be a temperate hardwood forest, and yet we got tons of evergreens that you can make an argument are, well, I mean, in terms of paper production, it's you know, so-called managed forest that's planted for purposes of its quick growth and harvest potential, and you can argue it's an invasive species.
Really?
Yeah.
So they
and on the other hand, I mean, most people, Dave, don't even know what it looks like when mountaintop removal comes to town. This state is so perverse in its obsequious, fawning, embarrassing genuflection to the coal industry. The West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting, they say it means protection, but that's bullshit. The WVDEP has approved permits to mountaintop remove next to the Kanawha State Forest. Now, what happens when mountaintop removal comes to town is the first thing they do is they bring in the timber crews. And I don't care if the oak trees are 100 years old or 200. I don't care if there's I don't care if there's sweet gum or poplar or whatever. Sycamore, who cares? They clear cut the mountain. I mean, nothing is left alive. They clear cut the mountain. And then you would think, well, gosh, I mean, you want to maximize profits, right? So put those damn those cut trees on a truck and send them off and make something out of them. Uh-uh. No. They take that aforementioned D9 caterpillar and push all the trees into a great big pile. And then they set fire to them.
It's crazy.
And then when that's done, they push it over into the valley next to it, if they've gotten a valley fill permit. So you
they,
get...
They don't salvage any of it? They don't... They
no, don't hell no. They're in a hurry. Mountaintop removal only works if you maximize production and minimize the time of production and minimize the labor involved and get in and get out dirty, quick, ugly, and rich.
Sounds horrible.
It is horrible.
It's really horrible.
It is horrible. Hey, Dave, I got to roll, but so hopefully some other folks can get in on the single line. But
right.
It's been good talking to you.
Yeah, good talking to you, too.
All right. Bye now. If you were trying to get... That's our buddy Dave calling from Portland. If you were trying to get in, and, you know, I see phone calls coming in during other calls. If you were trying to get in, now's your chance. The line is open, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. I'm not over dramatizing. I'm not making this out to be something that it isn't. It's clear cutting. It really is. And it is absolute and total devastation and destruction. And it's all done. It's very profitable for the banks that finance it, whether it be Deutsche Bank or Commerzbank in Germany, or whether it be Credit Agricole in France, or whether it be Bank of America in Charlotte. It is very profitable. Even if the share prices of the individual companies like Alpha Natural Resources are garbage. I mean, at this point in time, something like Alpha Natural Resources stock is just about junk. It went from a high of 70-some-odd, maybe, all the way down to wherever it is now. You can look it up. And all the suckers, I mean employees of Alpha Natural Resources who got, profit sharing? So they get shares of Alpha stock? Suckers! He ain't gonna be no retirement, baby. Because see, that's the thing, when it goes, when everything's gone and they're done, you cash out, you leave the suckers holding the bag, you leave in the dark and the still of the night, and so long and thanks for all the fish. Yeah. If you are listening live, remember, you cannot reach the program by dialing the old number, 304-658-3333. You have to dial the make-do number that we're using right now until the phone processor gets fixed. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. I want to send out thanks to Asa, who alongside Sal is often there just about every night. Our fundraising is down to $45. $45, and that way we start tomorrow with just our regular daily goal. PayPal button, traditional mail, however you like. Note coming in from David. He says, that was awesome that Elon Musk took his patents open source. Here's an idea that I thought would work really well for everyone. If these green billionaires were to go to states like West Virginia and Kentucky and other states that do a lot of coal, and if these guys were to set up production facilities for Tesla and solar panels, wind turbines, and recruit the people working in the dirty fossil fuels like coal and fracking, that would be an economic frontal attack on dirty energy in favor of new clean technology. Wouldn't that be great? It'd have an effect of changing public opinion. Green jobs could supplant and replace the dependence on fossil fuels. It is what must happen. It is absolutely what must happen. But bear this in mind. Remember, remember when the Russians were in Afghanistan? And it wasn't particularly historic, but do you remember the movie, the Tom Hanks movie, Charlie Wilson's War? Yeah. Remember how they go through all the business of monkey wrenching the Soviet invasion and occupation of Afghanistan? Remember how we didn't learn anything from that? No, never mind, I'm getting off track. Remember at the end of the movie where he talks about we won the war and we're going to screw up the peace? Because there was Charlie Wilson at the end of the movie saying, listen, we got to pump money in there. We got to build schools. We got to build infrastructure. We got to have roads. We got to have power lines, yada, 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 yada. And everybody went, nah, we won. Screw it. Time to move on. We had our fun. Well, that's how you get to Taliban. Or get to the Taliban. Well, the same thing, I'm afraid. Dave's note is absolutely right. But the same thing, I'm afraid, is going to happen in Appalachia that has always happened in Appalachia. And when the next bust comes for this sad and tormented minor key region, when that next bust comes, there will never be another boom to follow it in coal or hydrocarbons. It will be over. And because this country has, through its history, a habit of ignoring this region, if it's not laughing at this region, this place will be left a wreck. When the coal industry is gone, the sludge dams will still be here. When the coal industry is gone, the poisons will still be in the water. When the coal industry is gone, the sickness will still be in the communities. If you were looking at this happening anywhere else on this planet, you would describe it as an ongoing act of genocide. Because that is exactly what it is. Appalachian people have been deliberately driven out of their homes and homelands where they've resided for generations. Poisoned, blasted, bombed. Wells ruined. It is possible to get Appalachia right, but we have to want to. And we have to want to badly enough to outshout, drown out the coal industry. Ron in Raleigh had a note a few minutes ago in which he said, I just had a thought. If Walmart goes off the grid like Jan in the UK was talking about, isn't that sort of a guerrilla war against coal? And it absolutely is. And I can't wait to hear the friends of coal. Of course, I don't know. Would Walmart go off the grid in West Virginia just to save a nickel or a few million nickels, billion nickels, maybe a few trillion nickels? Would they? Because then when that happens, when solar panels start popping up, let's say solar panels start popping up on that mountaintop removal site in Logan, West Virginia, where the Walmart is and it's crumbling and falling apart and the mountains falling apart behind them. Let's say they put solar panels up. Well, don't you imagine all the low information coal people are going, what's them? That ain't clean coal-fired electricity. Marvelline, where are we going to shop besides Walmart? They ain't friends of coal no more. Sometimes I feel bad about mocking them that way. But Jesus, you have to hear them. You can be sort of academically sympathetic, but when they get back up in your face, it runs away in a hurry. A because, see, in communities like Logan, Walmart has become the only game in town. Where Walmart goes, businesses die. Walmart is an almost Soviet concept now. If they don't have it, you don't need it. These little West Virginia towns used to have men's shops and women's shops. I've talked about how my grandfather was referred to by his buddies in the community and on the job as the Count. The man would be filthy at the end of a day down in the hole. But the first thing he did at the end of the shift was hit the bathhouse, clean himself up, and get dressed back in his street clothes to go home, because he would not drag that filth into Granny's home. And yet now, here's Mitch McConnell running ads in Kentucky, picturing those poor miners who were dragged out without pay, forced to attend a Romney rally, weren't even allowed to go to the bathhouse. They had to show up filthy from the mine to stand and be stage props for the Republican Party, and they've been recycled. No kidding, they have. They have been recycled, and they're now in a Mitch McConnell ad about how he'll fight the EPA. Wow. Where does the time go? 3 minutes before the hour. Time to get on out of here. This has been what I hope was a delightful, as delightful for you as it was for me, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And shucks, we didn't pluck off, gonna pluck them. We didn't pluck off half of the thorns that we could have. Well, thank you, Jim. Best damn show you have ever done, period. Signed, Jim. Well, thank you kindly. That's amazing. Because there's a lot of shows, a lot of programs. We don't call it a show, a lot of programs. So tomorrow is Friday on the front porch. Barring some sort of overnight change, we will start tomorrow with a fundraising goal of $195. Thanks again to everybody who helped get us almost all the way out of the hole, and that is a big, big deal. Thank you to Texas Betsy, and thank you to Reinhard, thank you to Leo, thank you to Kelly, thank you to Sal, thank you to Asa. We'd be in a real mess without y'all. Oh, hell, there just wouldn't be a program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Ben Birch and John Fox, critical members of the little band that keeps this whole thing running. Thank you both. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And acheact.org, acheact.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.